Hi, friends, and we're nearing the end now of this particular section in Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, and it's on the six stages of discipleship. We've had a lengthy discussion so far of the fifth stage, the Chela within the aura. And we do notice that DK seems to write for a number of different levels of understanding. So here he is hinting at the activity of the heart of the sun, even as he is dealing with something much closer to home. He's telling us how all of this leads into a fuller understanding of the science of the breath. This is the little segue from the completed program 23. That breath is all, and in the method of invocation and evocation, the coming science of the New Age, which underlies the entire process, you have a hint as to the structure and activity of the heart of the sun. He does want to keep us ever alert, I would say, to the second ray qualities of this planet and of our solar system. The heart of the sun found on the cosmic mental plane, the organ, he calls it, of this second ray solar system. And using the language that is having to do with expansion and contraction, the taking of blood pressure, with which many of us are familiar, the diastole and systole system of evolution, which is found in the universal life process. So as I say, he's writing on a number of different levels, depending on the knowledge and progression status of his reader. Let's see if there's anything else here. Yes, he says, he's given us a lot of details. He's given us the flow of the outstanding radiation of the Master's aura. And he's saying, I'm giving you a lot of details, and they are of purely technical interest. They are of technical interest and are purely academic and constitute simply word symbols of an inevitable, really inevitable for all of us who are following his work, inevitable evolutionary process. They describe the divine inspiration to which all human beings are subject as an integral part of the life of God himself. Well, maybe it's everybody that's included in this. Let us say, probably is so. The divine inspiration, the breathing in of that outstanding radiation of the Master, and one which is consciously registered, as for a long period it may not be consciously registered, when a man reaches the stage of discipleship and initiation. And by that, I suppose he means accepted discipleship and later initiation of the third degree, which certainly a cheva within the aura would have to possess. Okay, let's see if I can grab hold of a little Okay. It's as a little aside, believe it or not, when you think of Finland, you often think of maybe people living in ice houses or igloos, but today is a hot day in the summer, well over 90 degrees Fahrenheit. So I'm dressed in my best orange regalia here, trying to finish this particular section. So it takes us to program number 24. And we are on page 764. And there's only 9 pages left. Today is the 22nd of June. And we're going to go on to a new stage. And from what I've been able to gather, DK is not so confident in our understanding. This is the stage of Cheva within the Master's heart. It sounds like a sentimental position, but he will explain that it is not. It's not all about being especially and warmly loved, although as the Cheva advances into the aura of the Master, that may be increasingly true. So he says here, each time we consider the various stages of discipleship, it becomes more difficult for him to give the neophyte, and that's who we are, a true picture of the state of consciousness and the inner situation and relationships. Well, it sounds natural enough because we are rather removed from these high stages. So many of us not yet even certain that we have taken the stage of accepted disciple and are more and more under the Master's eye and tutelage. In the stage of Chela in the Light, he's leaving quite a bit of that instruction, which is necessary to the guiding disciple on the inner planes, and maybe sometimes on the outer as well as inner. But from the time of accepted discipleship and onward, the Master himself is providing so much of the guidance. So, why is it more difficult? Why is it more difficult? This is, he says, also due to the fact that I'm attempting to deal in these more advanced stages with awarenesses which have no parallel or correspondence in the experience of even the advanced aspirant. And that would be, well, what would it be? Someone maybe who had taken the second initiation. There's a lot of overlapping of these terms, and it's not so important that we get some kind of rigid, cut and dried classification of the different stages. They do blend and overlap. So, no parallel or correspondence in the experience of even the advanced aspirant. We know, I mean, our anchor point is that every true aspirant has taken the first initiation. And that we have to use truly as a marker. Now, in some cases, rare cases, one may become, for the purposes of protection, as judged by the eye of the Master, an accepted disciple before one is an advanced aspirant, in the way that Master DK describes. Anyway, he's dealing with what to us is very much the unknown. And we have words, symbols, but we don't have, let us say, the living experience. And more in what he is describing, we have to seek out the living experience. He goes on. When we are considering the last three stages, we are definitely dealing with what might be called the initiate consciousness at a high stage of expansion with knowledge, and with knowledge for which we have no terminology. Now, what does he mean by the last three stages? Probably the Shela on the thread, Shela within the aura, and Shela in the master's heart. It is possible, however, that he might be including the seventh stage of the blending of the lights, in which the Chela is becoming a master. So we might be dealing, we'll see a little as we go along, with Chela within the aura, Chela within the master's heart, and Chela in that stage, which is signified, or in which this peculiar and very advanced process occurs, the blending of the lights. Okay. Is it not apparent to you that the initiate of high degree lives in a world of reactions and of subtle phenomena which are totally unimaginable to the average disciple? Right there is the indicated word, totally unimaginable to the average disciple who, well, who is that average disciple? Is it the accepted disciple, or is it the probationary disciple? But at one point, Master DK says, look, better consider yourself average in terms of your discipleship and your status, because otherwise there may enter in this excessive love of the personality. We don't want to try to stand out in any sense for the sake of being more outstanding than our brothers. We simply want to do the job that is before us and to do it well. So that's a question. Is it apparent to us that the initiate of high degree, probably fourth degree and beyond, lives in a world of reactions and subtle phenomena which are totally unimaginable to the average disciple? Is it? Let's pause and try to answer that question within ourselves. I think we can see why Master DK's work to convey to us something of the reality of these higher states is so difficult. He's trying to bring to our attention certain processes, states of awareness, etc., with which we have no experience. So he is making a bridge for us for the time when his words will take on a new livingness, because we will have reached the stage of experiential participation. Of this disciple, the average disciple, he is, therefore, when functioning on the physical plane, or in the three worlds, only bringing the, this is more about the initiative high degree, okay? He is, therefore, when functioning on the physical plane or in the three worlds, only bringing the lowest aspect of his consciousness into play. So we get used to the idea that indeed the master can function on the myopic levels, where we find ourselves almost habitually in our consciousness. So when Master DK is writing these letters, they are often about fairly mundane obstacles in the life of the disciple whom he is counseling, but much more is going on in worlds above that, where the master habitually lives, and where he habitually focuses his awareness. I have, says Master DK, for years taught you, and your interest has been profound. Many of the technicalities of the occult sciences are yours, and you know much theoretically. This is evidenced by the interest shown and the questions submitted, because he was able somehow, of course, to look over these things as they came into the Arcane School under the supervision of Alice Bailey. And these questions, okay, these dealt with the permanent atoms, their functioning, and their vitalization. So, you know much theoretically. I think that's probably true of so many of us. We've read a lot and we know much theoretically, but that's just not the same as functioning in the world where the master functions, and at those points of tension which open doors to experiences of which we really, from our habitual point of view, have no living idea. So here he's taking off a bit on the quality of the questions and their particular target, such as the permanent atoms, which are very, in a way, material structures and run the risk of materializing the consciousness if interest in them is overly much indulged. From the standpoint of the initiate, such as Master DK is, such questions are of no moment. To be interested in the permanent atoms is on a par with being interested in the nature of the gastric juices, which makes the process of living on the physical plane a continuous rebuilding. The analogy is closer than you think, and we would have to think this through. These gastric juices, hydrochloric acid, other things, break down for assimilation that which is ingested, and then assimilated. So I'll just highlight this. Obviously, when there are so many things of great importance, such an interest seems, well, maybe of interest to the specialist, but not to someone who is trying to learn the rules of occult progression of the soul in incarnation. It seems a little bit off the center, rather eccentric. Occultly speaking, he says, a constant consideration of the digestive system or of any other bodily function leads to difficulty. Chronic invalids are frequently so, though not in every case, are frequently so because of their physical preoccupation with the form nature on the outer plane over a long period of time, long period of years. And that's an interesting statement. There are lesser and greater preoccupations. And the permanent atoms, acute study of them seems a bit like a sidetrack, we might say, as I say, however interesting it might be to someone who may be specializing in the digestive organs. We have a medical system now which is filled with specialists, and it doesn't take the whole man into consideration. So there are other organ systems, maybe heart, lungs, urinary systems, which over much concentration upon can debilitate. We don't want to debilitate through excessive concentration. So let's just say, so I just almost had one of those events where everything disappears. But the idea here is to avoid debilitation through excessive attention on purely physical systems. And the permanent atoms, at least as they apply to the atomic triangle and the personality per se, is very definitely associated with physical processes. It is possible, says this Tibetan, and I say this with deliberation, that means he's thought it over, and he says it with definiteness, to have serious physical disability and yet be so full of vitality and so uninterested in the physical mechanism that chronic invalidism, as usually understood, is not possible. This is not the same thing as the triumph of mind over matter, or the theory of perfect health. Well, there's that, those words, chronic invalidism, which I suppose was a danger for those working with Master DK. They were under a lot of pressure. And sometimes their interests were simply off the track, you might say. And while they thought they were dealing with truly occult matters by studying the permanent atoms minutely, they were in fact setting up a difficult physical situation for themselves. But that's interesting, isn't it? So full of vitality and so uninterested in the physical mechanism. And yet, having something perhaps seriously wrong with them, but they overcame it with their attitude. Now, DK tells us what it is not, this kind of, this particular kind of triumph. He says, this is not the same thing as the triumph of mind over matter, or the theory of perfect health, as is presented in the Christian science orthodoxy. It is a question of a surmounting energy emphasis, which negates the imposition of force effects upon the consciousness. Well, this is really important, and we are to ponder the last sentence because it gives us the key to the health problem, handling it in the future. It is a question of a surmounting energy emphasis, which negates the imposition of force effects upon the consciousness. And these force effects are found, I think, very much in the outer world, but always we must learn to enhance the energy emphasis when we are distinguishing between energies and forces. And not always is that done in the text with such distinctiveness. So not the same thing as the triumph of mind over matter. Although that triumph can certainly exist. Let's ponder on what it is. It is a question of a surmounting energy emphasis from higher points of tension, from the soul, from the triad, which negates the imposition of force effects upon the consciousness. Now, maybe many of us will have to adopt that surmounting energy emphasis, or at least learn how to handle it and overcome the forces which are causing the difficulty. And here, of course, the key to the handling of the health problem in the future. We are to ponder on this last sentence, this foregoing sentence, because it holds the key to the right handling of the health problem in the future. And he does suggest that there will be a health problem. I think that when a person is firmly established in the third degree, the usual health problems will disappear. That's what he seems to say at certain points. Now, in the same way, says the Tibetan, a constant consideration of the permanent atoms and of the spirillae would lead to an intensification of the form life and to the tyranny of the force as it flows through them. That's not a very pretty picture. And I'd like to put that in the color which shows that this will manifest. So really we find the Tibetan warning his students away from such a material preoccupation. They have to learn how to put the essence of the process before these diverse points of tangential interest. That seems, I think, very important. There are undoubtedly analogies and correspondences. We see how the Tibetan's mind works, that could be worked out in connection with the spirillae in the microcosmic life and the seven and the planes and subplanes of the macrocosm with a possible subsequent relation of both to the seven centers, microcosmically understood, because he's expanding it here, you see. He's saying, yes, of course, you can use analogy to enlarge this picture through undoubted analogies. And the possible subsequent relation of both to the seven centers, microcosmically understood, and the seven planetary schemes, macrocosmically understood. Yeah. It's not that it is a worthless pursuit or that it has no value in terms of expanding one's picture of the relation of the microcosm to the macrocosm. But, and here comes the big caveat, the goal for the majority of aspirants is not to limit their consciousness by a concentration upon the minutiae. And indeed, when you're dealing with the permanent atoms, we are dealing with the minutiae, such as the permanent atoms and the details connected with the individual form nature. It is not that. That is not the goal. Now notice he leaves open the fact that there may be, perhaps scientifically inclined, aspirants for whom the task is along those lines. But he is interested in training the average disciple, the average true aspirant. And that is a different thing. So let's keep the essence before our eyes. What are we trying to accomplish in our own lives, and what are we trying to help others accomplish as well? The objective, says the Tibetan, of each aspirant is to expand his consciousness to include that which lies beyond himself. So it's clear, isn't it? To attain to the more elevated states of consciousness in the life of the group and of humanity, and to integrate himself consciously into the hierarchy, eventually into Shambhala, and occultly know God in his many phases of all-inclusive extension and perfection. So pause for a moment and think about your objectives. Do they accord with what Master DK here describes as the objectives for the aspirant? The expansion of consciousness, the deepening of consciousness becoming more inclusive. And the recognition that other people, apparently other people, are other selves. They are you. That recognition. And getting rid thereby of the egotistically producing a great heresy of separateness. It's an altogether different thing, isn't it? And are we in accord with it? That's the question. God, occultly, our planetary logos, let's call that being temporarily God, has many phases. Many extensions. Many perfections. And it may be a bit of an escape to focus on the minutiae, which are so easily retained or constrained, we might say. It is information which others perhaps do not yet have, but that is not in itself an excuse for focusing in this acute manner upon the minutia. Perhaps it's enough to know that these permanent atoms do exist and that they have various locations and that they condition the form and structure of various of our vehicles. Perhaps that's enough at our particular stage of development. A close concentration upon the study of the spirillae and atoms would be scientifically and technically interesting and possible. That's what he's trying to show. Not that it's a worthless study in all instances, but would not lead to increased spiritual development, but to increased difficulty in the treading of the path. Maybe we just don't believe that to be the case, but we're being told, yes, it is the case. And if anything in this battle that is now raging between the angel of the presence and the dweller on the threshold, we do not need further emphasis upon and strengthening of the dweller on the threshold. We do not need that. And yet the book was written by Babbitt, supposedly a disciple of K.H., which showed the structure of the atom as occultists saw it, and not as the burgeoning science of the times. Even now, the model of the atom, as science presumes it exists, with the electron shells and the changes of orbit and so forth, is very different from what occultism presents as the structure of the atom. So there was a good reason to present it, but people carry things too far. The more advanced a disciple, this is interesting, the more dangerous such emphasis and preoccupation would be. Whereas the scientist or the aspirant upon the probationary path could study such matters with relative impunity, because he would not be in the energy which could galvanize these points of force into dangerous activity. And maybe that's a surprise too. We might think that the more advanced disciple would be in a better position to withstand the kind of emphasis which would arise as he studies the permanent atoms. But then, you know, he would be within that energy. He would bring in the energy which could bring to the permanent atoms a whole greater activation and materialization of the consciousness and strengthening of the dweller on the threshold. So this is one of those places where, whether we believe it or do not believe it, it is the part of wisdom to focus, as Master Dike suggests we focus. At a certain point, you know, it is true that the advancing disciple cannot foresee every eventuality and cannot say, no, no, I'll handle this. I will come up with my own conclusions at a time when the master is offering the wisest conclusions, the wisest advice. For this reason, I am not dealing with the permanent atoms, as there is no need for you to give time and consideration to them. Well, DK certainly has justified what some might consider an omission in his teaching. It's for our own protection. And there is one of those examples of something that we just would not know unless we paid close attention to what he says. And even then, our knowing is limited to a kind of faith we're willing, because of his proven record of accuracy and useful teaching, to accept what is said. If you are living as desired, and if you are seeking to profit by my instructions, the training of the lower nature and the development of the forces which can function as form divinely consecrated will proceed normally and safely. And basically, I see that this is an interlude section before he really takes up the question of the Chela within the master's heart. I mentioned the permanent atoms to show the lines of energy distribution, but not in order to indicate any need for mental interest in these aspects of the form. I think what we have here is an understanding that they do exist in their general structure, but we do not, we are not being encouraged to make of the permanent atoms a kind of preoccupying study. It is an ancillary study, except in the case of those particular aspirants, disciples, initiates, whose line it is to develop the new occult science. Well, friends, we are to page 766, 767. We have about 6 pages to go. And what I'd like to do, since it is a new subject, is to perhaps make this a short program and then get on to the question of the chela within the master's heart, which is obviously the next dedicated section. So 762, wait, let me just see. Yeah, this is a short program, number 24. And on the 22nd, and we'll be taking up then, we'll call it program 25, or the 6 stages of discipleship video commentary. And basically, we are here at, let's call it 766, 67. And if I go too far in thinking that I may be able to actually get going on this today, then I will be proven wrong. But at the moment, I will anticipate that that is what will happen. So, I hope that this is functioning properly, and I'll stop the recording.